His name is Lyle Pressler, punk rock legend and music industry vet. His name is Jim Shear, most tenured DJ in the history of music television. It's the Week in Music with Lyle and Jim, and it all starts now.
Hello, everybody. My name is Jim Shear.
And I'm Lyle Pressler.
And on today's episode, Chris Brown is arrested, the passing of a Mexican singing legend, Axl Rose is still going strong, the Misfits recruit a drummer, Bruce Springsteen sets a personal record, but before all of that, we've got to talk about the MTV Video Music Awards. They took place at Madison Square Garden in New York City on Sunday night. Beyoncé's Formation won Video of the Year. Rihanna was presented with the Video Vanguard Award from Drake, who many likened as being a smitten prom date. Beyoncé stole the show. Rihanna performed four sets of medleys. Kanye got on the mic and debuted a new video. And Key and Peele and DJ Khaled were, I guess, the unofficial hosts. Lyle, you were there.
What did you think? I was there. And full disclosure, I am associated with one of the executive producers. So you can understand I might have a certain perspective or bias about what I witnessed. But yeah, I was there. I was there with my daughter, and we had a great time. We really did.
Let me, there's so much to talk about.
Yeah.
So first of all, Rihanna, it's the first time it's ever been done. Instead of doing one medley, she did four medleys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for me, it was a little unclear at the beginning. She opens the show, and at the end of the first 3 minutes, fans might be thinking, oh, that's it? And then they kind of had to explain it within the context of the show. They said, well, no, she's doing more. And then I think at one point they brought out a comedian. I forget her name. And she's like, this is Rihanna's last medley. And then she ended up doing one more after it was announced that she was doing the last one.
I didn't
catch
that.
So I wish, yeah, because you were watching, I mean, you might have missed a lot.
Yeah,
when
you're there, you just don't see the same thing. I mean, they put stuff up on screens, but then there's other stuff going on, so it's hard to follow the thread of the actual broadcast.
So yeah, my whole complaint from the beginning was there wasn't enough promo, there wasn't enough context, there wasn't enough buildup.
Mm.
So if this was part of the promo, like Rihanna's going to do something that's never been done before, she's going to perform four medleys,
mm-hmm.
not one, but four throughout the course of the night, that would have, you know, given context to the viewer, I think.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I mean, I'm sure knowing the way they do things, and you've been involved in this, they'll do a whole post-mortem on trying to figure out, like, you know, what they did right, what they did wrong. I'm not privy to any of that information, so I couldn't help you with that. But you commented, well, I think it was last week, that you were sort of blissfully unaware that the show was going to be at Madison Square Garden.
I didn't know.
Right, exactly. So,
well, I heard this year all the executives are just going to listen to this show for their postmortem.
Well, good for them.
They're going to
they'll be in better shape, I think.
So, yeah, one more thing about Rihanna's performance. When she did We Found Love, which is one of the most uplifting dance tracks of the last 10 years, she just kind of lazily went through the breakdown. I'm like, "No, man." I've gone nuts in clubs. I've gone nuts when that breakdown played. So I just wanted some more energy during
that
build-up and breakdown of We Found Love. So is Rihanna upset that Beyoncé, who received the Vanguard 2 years ago and got a 16-minute medley, got a 15-minute medley this year?
Well, you know, she is Queen Bee.
No, she stole the show.
That's what
everyone,
that seems to be the consensus.
But if you invite LeBron James into your basketball clinic, he's going to steal the show too. But does he deserve to steal the show?
You know,
Should we give the light to Stephen Curry? Maybe it's his clinic.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that works. I don't know that anybody, as far as I know, nobody appears to be upset.
Okay.
At least I haven't heard anything like that. I certainly haven't heard anything in the press about it. And so I guess it's just you know, one of my complaints about a lot of this stuff, Jim, is that, you know, there seems to have been in recent years, like a serious attempt to micromanage every aspect of every artist's career. Like, everything has to be managed and manipulated.
Yes.
And while I understand the desire to do that, and I can sympathize with it, I think it's impossible. I just think it's an impossible task. You can't do that. So sometimes you just got to let it happen. I mean, there are certain realities. It's like you said, if I managed, you know, hey, I just happen to know LeBron James, I met him at a party, and I'm going to bring him over to our basketball clinic. Well, if Stephen Curry's there, he's just going to have to eat it. You know what I mean? Like, that's just because I'm not doing it to show him up. I'm doing it to bring LeBron over because the guys in the clinic would like to see LeBron, you know? So it's sort of that kind of thing.
Yeah. I think it would have been fair if you gave Beyonce 7 or 8 minutes.
You see, I don't think my sense of it, though, Jim, is that you don't basically tell her what she can do and can't do.
You say, you can play as long as you want, Beyonce.
Yeah, and you just sort of, I guess you sort of hope. It's just like if you invite LeBron, you hope he's not just dunking the whole time.
I like limitations.
I like limitations too.
She could have stolen the show in 6 minutes, and right. People would have been talking about it on social media.
Well, you know, but again, it's one of these things where sometimes it's their world, and we just sort of acquiesce to it.
All right. So speaking of Beyonce and Rihanna and Kanye West, it's a crazy assertion, but did the VMAs rely too heavily on the stars? Well, I like to see the up-and-comers, too. It felt like they were just way in the shadows.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you and I have had this discussion a million times, and I think the sad reality of the modern music world is that the top artists are the only ones getting major label contracts, are the only ones getting the serious endorsement contracts, and they are the only ones that people at least appear to want to see. And they're not particularly interested in an old model of these types of things where they get exposed to a lot of different music. Now, that could be because they get exposed through other means, and so they want their show, their top-line shows, to be filled with stars. You know, I don't know. But I think that what I would call the stratification of the industry is basically full and complete now. I mean, the top tier people rule it, and they rule it completely. I mean, didn't they do wasn't there a study on the YouTube videos, and something like, you know, 90% of all video views involve the top 1% of the artists?
Wow.
So that's about as stratified as you can get. I mean, that's if you chart that, it's a steep, I mean, it's an incredibly steep climb. So,
I mean, stars are important. You definitely need stars.
Sure. Yeah.
But 10 years from now, you know, who's gonna be the new Rihanna and Beyonce and Kanye?
Well, if it's best new artist, isn't it DNCE?
Oh, and what was Kanye trying to say?
I
actually took a stance, Lyle. 2 minutes into his speech, I thought, okay, you know what? I'm done. I'm gonna go clean my cat litter right now, and I did. So I had a protest in my apartment while watching the VMAs.
I think there was. I got the sense of the people I was around. Because, you know, at those moments, it's somewhat quiet in the arena, right? Mm-hmm. And I got the sense that everyone is sort of inching up on the edge of their seat, waiting for something to happen, you know? Waiting for, because he starts to, like, you can see him, like, it's almost, the thing about him, it's great, I think, is you can actually visualize the gears turning in his head. And then you see the red marks on the gears, and you're like, don't get there, don't get there, don't get there, you know, don't get to the red line, there it comes. The only thing was, I was amazed, and everyone commented about this, but I thought at the time, was like, he's smiling so much. I've never seen him smile that much. Like, he really, really seemed, I mean, he seemed to be enjoying himself, but I don't know what he was trying to say. I mean, I'd sort of pick up the thread, and then I'd lose it again, and I'd pick it back up, and I'd lose it again, and they didn't seem to be a consistent thread through it. He was sort of, he was riffing, so, you know.
And then he premiered a new video.
You've heard that in the new video. That was interesting.
Now, speaking of micromanaging people's careers, how was it that Britney Spears' performance was the next performance after Beyonce's?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, Jim, you've had experience with these shows. I mean, it's usually like constant shuffling all the time because people all of a sudden have an issue, or they show up late, or, you know, whatever it is. So I don't know. I don't know how that structure got set up. But somebody had to follow. I mean, that's the other.
I almost.
But that's the.
I didn't mind the Chainsmokers and Halsey because it is the number one song in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe throw that in there. And they know that they're not going to live up to Beyonce, but there's comfort in the fact that, hey, this is the number one song in the country. And then maybe put Britney on after that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how that works. I mean, but again, like I'm saying, I think it's like I said before, it's sort of like, hey, you know what? This is reality. Someone's going to follow this.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what? That person is going to either shine or suffer, you know, one or the other. I mean, listen, mm-hmm. listen, I can remember situations when I was playing. I remember a situation where we went out and we were playing in San Francisco. And we were supposed to be supporting the Dead Kennedys. And the Dead that's their town, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was at a fairly large venue. And before the show, Jello Biafra, the singer, comes up to us and says, "We're going on now." And we were like, "But we're supposed to be supporting you." He says, "I'm not following you. There's no way I'm following. I'm not doing it." He goes, I know what you guys are, and I'm not following. So we were like, all right, fine, so you go on first. And I think it was a little weird for us, too, because all of a sudden we were playing to the audience that had probably largely come to see them. You
right.
know? But, you know, hey, that's the way it works. It just, you can't control every aspect of that stuff. So
I didn't realize it until the following morning, but there was no tribute to David Bowie or Prince.
That's right, yeah.
And I maybe it's a good thing that I didn't think of it during the context of the show, but the next morning I thought, wait a second. No Bowie, no Prince tribute?
You know, I didn't,
not even a mention?
I didn't think about it either. You're right.
So are we past that? Because we live in the media age where, you know, if you're going to do a tribute, do it a week or two after they die. Other than that, you know, we forget about it.
Well, do you think it's forgetting about it, or do you think there's sort of a natural, like, point? I mean, these things are months old now. I mean, and...
Yeah, no,
and
it is, but I think...
And there have been a lot of other tributes that have been on the air, so...
There's been a ton of tributes on air, online, but there hasn't been a VMA award show
right.
that has taken place since the two died, and
right.
they had such a footprint on MTV.
Well, see, that's true. That is true. And maybe there should have been at least sort of a video package or something.
Just something.
Yeah.
Something.
I don't know. I can't. I don't know how that decision got made, you know.
Black Star from David Bowie won Best Art Direction.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Who won the rock category? Because we talked about it. Who won that category?
Oh, I'll have to look that up.
All right. Yeah,
that's a good question.
Because we did. We discussed that, so...
Yeah, let me look that up. So black journalists were calling it the blackest award show to date.
Mm.
The Oscars, it was not. So if that's the case, did you feel more needed to be addressed? Although Beyonce did walk the white carpet with the mothers of Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, and Eric Gardner. But within the 2.5-3 hour show, nothing was said. I mean... Alicia Keys came up and said a poem.
Well, I mean, but this goes to, and again, this is something we've talked about. At least this goes to the question of whether or not these types of events are really designed or should be designed for political statement or social mm-hmm. statement. Now, I'm not one of these knee-jerk people who says, they have no right to say something. I think it's fine. I think it's fine if somebody wants to get up and accept an Academy Award and make a statement about the Native Americans like Marlon Brando did.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the problem with it is, and I don't have a problem with that. The problem comes when everyone wants to do that. And then all of a sudden it's no longer a celebration of the accomplishments of the art. It becomes this is my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And my feeling is like, my feeling personally is that if you have strong feelings, those ought to be addressed in your art. Like, that's where your opportunity lies. Now, for an actor...
And Beyonce did that?
Yeah, exactly. She did that, and I think that's great. Now, for an actor, it's a little harder sometimes because you got to take the roles that you get, and, you know, you don't have all that much choice. But if you're writing songs or writing poetry or writing a book or doing even, physical art, you can put political ideas and social ideas into that art, and that's your statement. And if you want to do that, and then if you want to buttress it a little bit with some, comments, that's fine. But if you're putting on an entertainment program, you got to ask yourself, how much of this do we really want to get into? Because mm-hmm. Isn't there another venue for that? You know, isn't there mm-hmm. another place where you do that? And another place where it'll be more effective? Because I think a lot of times people just tune it out, man. I mean, you know, it's like, I want this person to be glamorous. I want this person to be talented. I want this person to sing to me. I don't want to hear this. Even if you have, even if you have sympathy for what they're saying, you may not want to hear it. You know, it's the old concept. If you went to a football game and you got up in the middle of it and tried to make a political speech, what would happen? Probably you'd be shouted down. Play the game. We're here to see a game. We're not here to like hear somebody tell us something. So, I mean, you know, it's always, that's always a rough thing. It's always a difficult situation. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Because I was torn on it. I did want something to be said from, you know, one person at least. But then I sat back and thought, this is just, this is a celebration of black culture. And Beyonce walked the carpet with the mothers of black men who were killed by police, Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, and Eric Gardner. So,
and then of course,
I was fine with it.
Yeah, and then in her performance, there is this explicit reference to it. You know, with the people being shot down. So I think that the point got made. I don't think there was any danger of that, of it not getting made. But then again, you know, again, we could focus group the show and determine whether people actually, you know, whether the average person actually picked up what was going on. Or whether it needed to be more explicit, or whether it needed to be made at all. I mean, that's the question. Look, there are 365 days in a year. This is one night, you know? I mean, if Beyonce wants to go on CNN tomorrow with Anderson Cooper, they'll have her. And they'll have her for as long as she wants to sit there and talk about it. I mean, I'm serious. I mean, they will. Yeah. And so I don't think there's any lack of avenue for expression, is what I'm saying. So you have to ask yourself as an artist whether I want to get up there and use this opportunity to make a statement or not. And I think a lot of them will probably say, and I think probably wisely in most cases, you know what, I'm just going to go up there and do what I do.
So in summation, oh, by the way, Lyle, Heathens from 21 Pilots won Best Rock Video.
Oh, okay. Okay, good for that.
Best Pop Video, Formation from Beyonce. Best Hip Hop Video, Hotline Bling from Drake. And Best Electronic Video, How Deep Is Your Love from Calvin Harris and Disciples. And in summation, on television, ratings for the VMAs took a 34% dip, although streaming was up 70%. And the VMAs accounted for nearly 90% of TV-specific social media posts on Sunday night. When we come back, we are going to talk about Chris Brown and the late, great Juan Gabriel.
Me hace llorar que no ves cómo te quiero y para qué me hace sufrir que no ves que más no puedo. Yo nunca, nunca había llorado y menos de dolor, ni nunca, nunca había tomado y menos por un amor, porque me hace llorar y te burlas.
Hey everybody, Jim Shear with Lyle Presler on The Week in Music. So yesterday, Lyle, pop singer Chris Brown was arrested on suspicion of assault with a deadly weapon. Around 3 a.m., police responded to a call from a woman claiming that Brown pointed a gun at her. The incident allegedly occurred when three uninvited guests showed up to Brown's house. In a series of Instagram posts, Brown insisted that he was innocent, saying that whenever he calls the police because a fan is stalking him, they don't show up until the next day. And, oh, by the way, the woman who accused Chris Brown of pointing a gun at her is wanted by the NYPD for questioning in connection with criminal theft. Although you said you recently saw an interview with this woman, and she comes off as a credible witness.
Yes, I saw her on TMZ. I thought she was credible. I think Harvey Levin thought she was credible from what I could gather from his response. Her story, and she had already, by the way, given her story to the police, according to her. I think her story contradicted some of the early reporting. But to make it short, she knew Chris Brown. She had met him before. She'd hung out with him before. She was under the impression that he was doing a new video and he was looking for potential casting. She went there with a friend. Now, I mean, we can all ask ourselves why all these activities seem to be happening after midnight, but but far be it for me to question the whys and wherefores of being a pop star. But in any event, she says that she went there and that everything went fine. There was no issue until there was apparently a guy showed up with some jewelry that he wanted to sell Chris Brown. Now, again, why you're buying jewelry at 2 o'clock in the morning, I don't know. But, you know,
right.
I mean, again, but in any event, that somehow or another, there was some perception that she interfered with the process, or she touched something, or she did something. She says she just touched something and said she thought it was beautiful. And one of Chris Brown's people got upset with her and started yelling at her. And then Chris got upset and he started yelling and ordered her out and pointed the gun at her. And that she left, and that this is one of the things that really is freaky. She claims that as she was being kicked out, one of Chris Brown's people tried to get her to sign a non-disclosure agreement about what she'd just seen. And she said, I didn't sign it. I got my phone back from him. I took my shoes. Apparently she was going without her shoes at that point. And I walked down the road with my friend, and that the neighbors called the police.
Oh.
That she didn't call the police, and that she said, sort of, I'm not even sure that I wanted to even be involved in it any further. I found her to be credible, but then again, people can, you know, persuade you of stuff that's not true. I thought she was credible. I think the problem for Chris is that then he goes on, you know, social media, and he's taunting the police and calling them names. And then apparently, you know, he throws a duffel bag out the window that contains certain things, you know, perhaps guns, perhaps drugs. So, you know, you're sort of piling up at least the circumstantial evidence here. And the problem is always going to be he said, she said. I mean, you know, I'm sure Chris can produce a version of the story that can be corroborated by people around him that's totally different and may be true. I mean, we don't know. And as far as this issue of her being wanted in connection with theft, that's another interesting part of the story.
So, Lyle, I live in a predominantly Latino neighborhood, and this was huge news this week. Mexican singing legend Juan Gabriel died this week at the age of 66. It was reported that he had a history of heart issues and was also battling diabetes. I believe they said his cause of death was a heart attack.
Oh.
Now, it was unexpected because just last Friday night, he played a sold-out show at the Forum in Los Angeles. And for those that don't know, he has the best-selling album of all time in Mexico, and he has sold over 100 million albums.
Yeah, I mean, it's phenomenal success.
I don't know a bunch about Juan Gabriel,
right?
But what is his American equivalent?
Oh,
would it be like a Frank Sinatra?
Yeah,
would it be like?
I mean, so.
So speaking of all-time greats dying, after battling Alzheimer's, actor Gene Wilder died this week at the age of 83, and he's probably best known for playing Willy Wonka in the 1971 classic Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, yeah. He was great. And, you know, one of the things that I learned about the Willy Wonka thing was, if you remember, when you first encounter him, he comes out with the cane, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's walking like a frail old man, and then he does the flip. He does the tumble, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was his idea. Like, that wasn't in the script. He came up with that. And he said, this is what I'm going to do. And I had wondered why we hadn't seen or heard from him in a while. And for those of you who don't know, like, he was married to Gilda Radner.
Mm-hmm.
And when she tragically died so young, I always thought, oh my goodness, you know, he's going to have a hard time living on. But he did live on for a long time, but we hadn't seen him in such a long time. And I think it's because he was, you know, he wasn't quote unquote presentable. Mentally. But yeah, I mean, I loved him. I thought he was just fantastic. Everything he ever did, he was one of those people where he walked on the screen and it was like you couldn't take your eyes off the dude. You know, I mean, it was fantastic.
See, you could have asked me this question 2 weeks ago, because when someone dies, we said, oh, they're the greatest, they're the best. 2 weeks ago, if you asked me who played their character the best in the history of film, Gene Wilder playing Willy Wonka is definitely in my top five.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Maybe my top three. I mean, there's nobody else. I mean, Johnny Depp tried doing Willy Wonka.
Right.
And he wasn't even in the same league as Gene Wilder.
And wisely, he tried to do it completely differently, because if he tried to do it like him, it would never have worked. I also thought his role as the accountant in The Producers is just priceless. I mean, it's not as much of a role, but it is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
But I mean, even the silly things he did, you know, the silly ones he did with Richard Pryor, even those, as dumb as they are, and they are dumb, they're like Dumb and Dumber comedies, But they still, he's still one of those people, like I say, he's, if when he's on screen, you're just looking at him because you're just waiting to laugh. You're waiting to laugh.
And what was great about Gene Wilder is that he never shied away from his Willy Wonka character.
No.
Like if someone came up to him in the street and they said, "You're Willy Wonka," a lot of actors would be like, "Get away, kid."
Yeah.
I did that movie 30 years ago. He would embrace anyone who came up to him and said that he was Willy Wonka. Because there's, I forget whatever anniversary edition of Willy Wonka there is, but there's a documentary in it. And he says, anytime a kid or a person comes up to him, he's like, "Yeah, I am Willy Wonka." And he will talk to that person.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So after wrapping up a summer stadium tour with Guns N' Roses, Axl Rose is back fronting AC/DC, who still have to make up 10 North American dates. He went from being rock and roll's missing enigma to the most dependable frontman of the summer. Axl Rose.
Hardest working man in show
road
business.
Road warrior.
Yeah. That's really,
to me,
that's a surprise, man. I figured long before now you and I'd be talking about the implosion. You know,
this is the feel-good story of the summer.
I agree with you. I agree. And you said it before a month ago, maybe. And I agree even more now. It's like it is the feel-good story.
to believe that he started this journey breaking his foot.
I know.
Rockefeller Records co-founder Damon Dash is developing a television series about the rise and fall of Rockefeller Records. He compared the series to the HBO show Vinyl and the FX series The People vs. O.J. Simpson.
Hmm.
So because he compared those two shows, it sounds like it's going to be a scripted series?
Mm. Sounds that way.
Who's going to play Jay-Z?
I don't know. They'll find somebody.
Jay Farrow? could Jay Farrow do a serious Jay-Z?
I don't know. That's a good question, man. That is a really good question.
I guess we'll find out.
Do you find this concept compelling, Jim?
I mean, I think they're just trying to make another empire.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think every channel is like basically saying, can you get me an empire? Can you get me an empire?
Right, but the sizzle about this is that it really happened and Jay-Z would be in it and you would imagine maybe Kanye or Beyonce pops up at some point.
Yeah, and then of course that's going to raise, I mean, that's going to raise all these legal issues, you know. We're bound to see a spate of attempts to block things and attempts to do things, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'll see how far it gets.
Yep.
So for the two original Misfits reunion shows happening at Riot Fest Chicago and Denver, the group has recorded former Slayer drummer Dave Lombardo to play drums. Mm. Good pick?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah.
I mean, he can play. I mean, you know, the Misfits never had they had several drummers over the years. They had Arthur Googie, and then they had Robo, I believe. I'm missing someone, I'm sure. And then they had, who did they have? Did Chuck Biscuits play with them at one point? I don't know.
I mean, they had a slew of drummers.
They had a slew of drummers. So it's not like the drummer is sort of a key person that you have to worry about. So as long as they can play, and I know he can play, I think that's great, you know?
Yeah, and I always like when they get someone kind of in the scene.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so someone from Slayer playing for the Misfits makes sense to me.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Lars probably would have done it too, you know? I mean, they love the Misfits, so but he probably was, he's probably busy, so I don't think he can do it.
So speaking of Misfits, the latest series of Topps Garbage Pail Kids features playful jabs at Radiohead, Radio Dead, Morrissey, Meaty Morrissey, Beck, Decked Beck, Death Cab for Cutie, Bashed Ben, and Axl Rose, Overworked Axl, with members of Guns N' Roses and AC/DC pulling at him from both sides. Lyle, are we going to collect and trade?
Well, I'm sorry. So how are these things? I can't picture this. What it's just a, they're just, what are they, album covers? What are they?
No, you never collected Garbage Pail Kids?
Well, I didn't collect Garbage Pail. I collected Wacky Packs. Wacky Packs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Not too far off from Wacky Packs, but these became popular in the 1980s, kind of a play off the Cabbage Patch Kids.
Yeah.
Although a morbid play off the Cabbage Patch Kids.
No, I remember that, but like what?
So they're just, they're the shape of baseball cards and they're stickers.
They're stickers. Yeah, no, I mean, but what's the graphic element to this? Like what? I mean, it's like
they look like Cabbage Patch Kids.
Oh, okay. So they render Morrissey as a Cabbage Patch Kid.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay, I got it. So, no.
Meaty Morrissey. So, Meaty Morrissey's a little chunky, and there's pieces of steak on the stage.
Ah, okay. So, now I got a picture. Now I got a picture of it. No, I will not be collecting this.
Okay. Tyler, the Creator, recently switched Twitter handles from @fucktyler to @TylerTheCreator. He explained, "My stock just went up because of that name change. How can I contact corporations like, yo, invest a bunch of money in me? Oh, yeah, my name has this in it. First impression is automatically out the window." Should have done this a while ago, right?
It took him this long to realize this. You know, it brings up this interesting thing. I mean, I'm sure you've done this, but like sometimes I'll hear about some new band and their name and I'll just go, never. Like you've consigned yourself to you've relegated yourself to a certain place because your name will never ever be accepted. Or you'll have to like initialize it or do something. You know what I mean? You know, it's always, but he didn't realize that. Okay, well, it's good that he came to his senses.
Listen to this one, Lyle. At a recent concert at MetLife Stadium, Bruce Springsteen broke his own personal record for longest live show by performing for 3 hours and 52 minutes. 2 days later, he set a new PB, personal best, by playing for 4 hours. Get this, last night he performed at MetLife Stadium. And he broke the record again, playing for 4 hours and 1 minute in his home state of New Jersey.
Okay, this is what I believe. I believe that Bruce has decided that over the next couple of years, he's going to kill off his audience. If he kills them off, then basically he can just say, you know what? That's fine. We're good now. We're good. I don't have to play any more shows. They're all dead. they've all been gradually beaten to cudgeled to death by my music. Jim, you know how I feel about this. 8 songs and I'm done, man. I would seriously have to leave. I would have to leave.
Now, I heard last night he was kind of tongue-in-cheeking the whole world record.
Okay.
Like in between songs, he would say, hold on, I gotta take a drink of water here, and he would just stall. So I think the crowd knew that he was going for his new personal best.
Well, I have to say that, like, I all joking aside, I am impressed. Color me impressed, because at his age, man, to be out there, and it's not like he's soft pedaling the thing. Okay, I mean, like that guy's going for it. I think it's pretty impressive. I will say that. Yeah.
So congratulations, Bruce.
Absolutely.
So birthdays, Lyle.
Ah, we have quite a few nice birthdays today. Mr. Van Morrison is 71 years old. Fab Five Freddy is 57 years old. A young 57. Rudy Schenker, the guitar player for Scorpions, will rock his birthday like a hurricane at 68. Gina Shook. Or Shock, sorry, from the Go-Go's. The drummer is 59. And Debbie Gibson, queen of the malls, is 46 years old. Makes me
46.
Feel very old.
Hey, 46 is kind of young.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, it's like she could still do it.
Yeah, definitely.
So the number one single on the Billboard Hot 100 this week, Closer from the Chainsmokers and Halsey. The number one album on the Billboard 200, Blonde from Frank Ocean. The number one song on iTunes, Closer from the Chainsmokers and Halsey. The number one album on iTunes, Blonde from Frank Ocean. And the number one song on Spotify, all together now, Closer from the Chainsmokers and Halsey. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, Lyle and I will have our music picks of the week.
Mr. Walker, I am extraordinarily busy, sir. I just wanted to ask about the chocolate. The lifetime supply of chocolate for Charlie. When does he get it?
He doesn't.
Why not?
Because he broke the rules.
What rules? We didn't see any rules, did we, Charlie?
Wrong, sir. Wrong. Under Section 37B of the contract signed by him, it states quite clearly that all offers shall become null and void if, and you can read it for yourself in this photostatic copy,
I, the undersigned, shall forfeit all rights, privileges, and licenses herein and herein contained, etc., etc., fax mendis incendium gloria calpum, etc., etc., memo bis punitor delicatum. It's all there, black and white, clear as crystal. You stole fizzy lifting drinks. You bumped into the ceiling, which now has to be washed and sterilized, so you get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
Hey, everybody. Jim Shear with Lyle Presler on The Week in Music. Time now for our music picks of the week. I'll go first, as I usually do. So my pick of the week is Sword in the Stone from Banks and Steels featuring Cool Keith.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a law firm.
It does.
Oh, no, it's
it does.
Not.
I know.
It's the collaboration of Interpol's Paul Banks with the Wu-Tang Clan's RZA. And I actually like the whole album. It's just a neat vibe between the two.
I caught... Who did they play on last night? Was it Fallon?
I didn't even know.
Yeah, and I was and I came in like maybe, you know, 30 seconds in, right? Because I was flipping around and I was like, and Sandy had fallen asleep, so I couldn't ask her like who this is. And I'm watching and I'm like, you know, watching it right, and I'm like, this is great. What is this? And then I'm looking at the two guys and I'm like, are those two guys in a band together? I didn't recognize either one of them, mind you. I had no idea. And then they were like, Banks and Steel. So I said, you know, I said something to Sandy, and she's like, oh, Banksy, yeah, she's on. I'm like, no, we're not talking about, there's no Banksy, okay? Like, we're not talking about that. We're talking about, there's a Banks, there's a different Bank. I said, no. But so, anyway, so I'm glad you've illuminated what this is, but I thought it was great.
Yeah, so here it is, Sword in the Stone from Banks and Steels featuring Cool Keith.
Still supremacy, take it to extremities. Can't be poisoned by your noise and always got our remedy. Microphone is weaponry, rapping skills legendary. Bust a nut on these sluts, only cause it's necessary. Polo weather, never shoving, tops with bitches, I'll be bagging. Undefeated, quite conceited, many times y'all catch me bragging. Can a motherfuckers walking without pants sagging? Pioneer this brand, y'all upon my bandwagon. Fire breather, dragon, disastrous, microphone abusing. Mix my poison lyrics with street life, hip hop abusing. Cruising in a Lamborghini, sipping on the drama teeny. Hood niggas saw me, they thought they saw a Lamborghini. My logo got carved inside your limestone. My mind has grown across five time zones. Bobby shake to the quake of a drum track. Make no mistake, after this you wanna jump back. Jump back, jump back, nigga, jump back. Got enough funk and skunk to fill a dump truck. Pump up your fist to this or you get lumped up. Immaculate conception. You thought you had life, but that was just my reflection. I'm circumcised, thoughts I pray through protection. Sterilized mind, I'm immune to infections. So make a U-turn before you burn, you churn. I don't give a fuck what you earn. This is hip-hop, soup, talk, but sperm. Get him out, get him out of here. Still, take him back, take him out of here. Still, put your motherfucker hands up in the air. I said, put your fucking hands in the air.
Samurai, sports spitter, bigger alternator, detonator, orchestrator, the heat's on the microwave, Darth Vader, take a shave, park up in the valley, the phantom pulling town square, get out with ballads, I take your girl inside checkers in the valley, they say she a stallion, the hat pump with 40 gallons, they see me arc two parked up in Parkview, men drumming out, workout, I can't slouch, women see the muscles, the flexing on the couch, I'm Billy Rayon, Toyota spot, low key gas station, get gas. You see the Avalon, bubble meeked up, I charge coats and Paragon, if she fall, I tell her go sew her hair on, stare on and drive out, the cat scratch your eyes out, I take my sword on board, the G4 and fly out. The Rolls Royce decapitate and throw your head out. Mexican Rydell, you see the cartel. Helmets on the first team in the box holes with triple beams. Magna Cartier watch. I'm tall as Chris Bosh. How you like to fit it? Moving, spin a watch.
Yeah, so quick question for you, Lyle. Mm. What was the live setup like? Was Paul on guitar?
Yeah, yes.
Or was he just a front man?
No, he was on guitar. They were standing like side by, they were standing parallel to each other on either side of the stage.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
And then there's obviously a live band backing them?
Live band backing them, yeah. But it was one of those things where I think I was so curious as to what I was watching, you know, because it was just very different. But I thought it was really good. So
yeah, to me it makes sense, but I don't know how in the world these two met.
Well, that's
lead
the
singer of Interpol and the RZA.
Yeah, that's a story in and of itself. So you know, I mean, it'll be interesting to see when you know the information comes out about how this all came together. But I thought it was good.
So Lyle, time for your music pick of the week.
Yeah, I decided to go with Beyonce. I have to say, and I think it was the result of having having seen the performance and being reminded of some of the tracks. But don't hurt yourself. And so why don't you play that?
Okay, Jack White's on this one, right?
Well, yeah, and we'll get into that.
Okay, Don't Hurt Yourself from Beyonce featuring Jack White.
I have to say that the reason why Well, not the reason, but if it's got John Bonham on it, it's going to be good. Okay? So if you don't know, that's a sample there. That's John Bonham from Led Zeppelin. That's the famous drum track from When the Levee Breaks, which is appropriate thematically to the song, to the songs. And,
sure.
And you know, because it's Louisiana. And so, but, and of course, Jack's on there and he does his thing. But I think basically, if you take that beat and lay it down and do something cool on top of it, you cannot lose. Now, you're going to have to pay an enormous royalty, but it's worth paying the royalty.
Which Beyonce can afford.
Yes, it's worth paying that royalty to get that beat, you know? And, of course, your friends, the Beastie Boys, did that at one point.
Mm-hmm. Rhyming and stealing.
Rather successfully, I'd say. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe we should have an all John Bonham sample radio station. Just like put all the samples. That's it. That's the whole playlist, you know, just samples of John Bonham playing.
Can you help me out with Beyonce? I've been so conflicted this week. So I think Beyonce is an incredible artist. But at the same time, I want her to make songs like Crazy in Love again.
Yeah.
So is she able to make a pop song like Crazy in Love, but still have the great art and message that she's doing now?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. And I was thinking that because I heard Crazy in Love on the radio, you know, a week ago, maybe, and had sort of almost forgotten how good a song it is. And what I'd say is that the nature of these artists, as we all know, is that they have almost unlimited musical resources. In other words, they can get virtually anyone to help them write songs, to, you know, come up with programming, to come up with beats, to come up with structures. They can do anything they want. So the answer to your question is, should she so desire, I am confident she could do it. The question is, does she want to?
To prove my point, and not to put you on the spot, Lyle, can you sing Formation?
No.
Okay, that one video of the year.
Yeah, I know.
Can you sing Bad Blood from Taylor Swift?
Yeah, sure. Sure.
That one video of the year last year.
Yeah. No, there's a big difference.
Can you sing Firework from Katy Perry?
Yes, I can. Unfortunately, I can. And I can sing Wrecking Ball, and I can sing, you know.
Yes. So what I'm saying is, if Hotline Bling won Video of the Year, we can all sing that. If Hello wins Video of the Year, we know it. But Formation wins, we're like, it's great. I don't remember it. I can't sing it.
Well, here's the thing, though. We talked about this. Is MTV awarding Video of the Year or Song of the Year? Because it'd be very difficult to argue that from a video standpoint, I mean, talking about visuals synced with music, from a video standpoint, that's the best video. I mean, or it's least arguably the best video.
But I think historically, it's kind of a mesh between the two.
I agree.
If it's a huge song, then they'll usually go for the song over the visuals.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So, Beyonce, if you're listening.
But sadly, I cannot answer your question.
Yeah, just something like Crazy. And I mean, you can still do the deep videos and the visual albums. You can do all of that. But I just want something that I can sing along to and remember.
Exactly.
Because over the last two albums, they've just been words. Surfboard, middle fingers, Becky with the good hair. But no hooks. I want hooks.
Yeah, no hooks. You're right.
All right. So we're going to take one more break. And when we come back, it is time to play Ask Lyle.
I mean, ultimately, it's to bring awareness and make people, you know, realize what's really going on in this country. There are a lot of things that are going on that are unjust. People aren't being held accountable for. And that's something that needs to change. That's something that, you know, this country stands for: freedom, liberty, justice for all. And it's not happening for all right now. It's something that I've seen, I've felt, wasn't quite sure how to deal with originally, and it is something that's evolved. It's something, as I've gained more knowledge about, you know, what's gone on in this country in the past, what's going on currently, these aren't new situations. This isn't new ground. It's things that have gone on in this country for years and years and have never been addressed, and they need to be.
Hey everybody, Jim Shear and Lyle Presler with The Week in Music, and I should point out that Lyle took time out of his own vacation to do the radio show this week.
Right.
So thank you, Lyle.
Yeah, this is my vacation from my vacation.
Okay. Yeah, I just hope your family doesn't hate me for this.
Ah, no, they're fine.
Ask Lyle.
Just one question on today's Ask Lyle. A serious question. What are your thoughts on Colin Kaepernick sitting out the national anthem?
Help me out with this. There was a preseason football game.
Preseason.
They were playing the national anthem, which is customary, you know, before the game. And what generally happens is most of the players, or all the players, stand up in sort of in a line, and they sort of either put their hand over their heart or something, and they take their helmets off, and they they listen to the national anthem. That's the customary way of doing it. And apparently, in this game, he sat on the bench behind the players.
Yes, and he wasn't texting his girlfriend or Snapchatting.
Right.
He said, hey, I'm sitting this out because black people in this country and minorities are not being treated fairly.
Right, right.
And until they do, I'm not going to stand up. Or until some progress is made, I'm not going to stand up for the national anthem.
Right, right, right. So this is not a novel concept. Let's remember that in the Olympic Games in 68 in Mexico City, you had two track and field athletes, African Americans, who did the Black Power salute while the national anthem was being played on the podium after winning. We also had, of course, Muhammad Ali, who risked his entire career basically saying, I'm not going to fight in Vietnam because I think it's wrong and I think people here are being oppressed. And I think that we're extending that oppression overseas, and my religion doesn't permit me to do that. And he, if not for a Supreme Court decision that was very close, he would never have boxed again, and seemed to have been prepared to do that. So these type of protests from athletes are not a new phenomenon. And I guess so. Your question to me is, what do I think of it? Right?
It's a very polarizing issue. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some people say, come on, man. You kick them out of the league. You have to have respect for the flag. All the men and women that have died for the United States of America throughout the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, the thing to remember in that is that Colin Kaepernick was not disgracing all the people who've died for the United States over the years. I mean, he didn't go back and think about World War I and World War II and, you know, and Korea. Mm-hmm. He wasn't thinking of those people. He was, who were, by the way, black and white and Hispanic and Asian and all sorts of, and Native American. You know, there's enough death in wars to go around, enough sacrifice. So he wasn't thinking of that. So that's the one thing I take off the table. The other thing to me is this issue of the respect issue. You know, we invest a lot in symbols, and sometimes I think we invest way too much in symbols. I think that symbols become oppressive to us in some instances. You know, I'll give you a little example I hope might be helpful a little bit. But I went to a high school, a private high school in Washington, D.C., where we called our teachers by their first names. Okay.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, you know, you'd think, well, that's really different and really cool. And I heard lots of opinions about this over the years. The fact of the matter was, is that what you quickly discovered was if you had respect for your teacher, it didn't matter what you called him or her. If you had no respect, the familiar didn't change anything. You see? So it was, you know, I could call you John and think you're an absolute idiot, or I could call you, you know, Jane and think you're fantastic, or I could call you Miss So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so. You know, it doesn't, there was no instant, people have this idea that by using symbols, we immediately confer some sort of respect or something onto something. And that's not necessarily true. Now, I'm not going to say calling your teacher by their first name is the same thing as being, you know, saluting the flag, but I'm trying to illustrate that respect is given for real. It's not just a symbolic gesture. Now, now, that all said, is that the appropriate venue to do that? And that's where, again, this is the same thing we were talking about before. It's a question of, is that a proper venue? Now, some would say, well, he's going to get the most attention by doing this, right? He's going to get much more attention than if he just does a press conference afterwards. Right? where they're not going to ask him about that. They're going to ask him about, do you think you're going to be traded? Are you going to be cut? Are you going to go to another team? You know, blah, 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 blah. They're not going to go and say, hey, Colin, how do you feel about social issues in the country today? So in some ways, I think he felt like this is the way for me to get attention to something I want to say. I guess I don't really know whether that's an appropriate venue for doing that. And I think that's one of those things where, you know, perfectly, you know, right-thinking folks can disagree. You know, I mean, again, would we want every single football player to walk on the field in every single game and make statements about something? What if it were animal rights? What if it were, you know, I mean, what if it were an environmental issue? You know, or do we draw the line at those issues which we feel simpatico with? You know, like if I'm really into animal rights and a player comes out on the field and makes a statement about fur, is that going to resonate with me? But is it appropriate for that player to do that? I don't know. I mean, I don't have an answer to it. I personally am not offended by it. I don't think it's necessary for people to salute the flag. Okay. I think if you don't, that doesn't make you a bad American. It certainly doesn't make you a person who's devaluing the service of people. You want to devalue the service of people, devalue it. I mean, people came back from Vietnam and got spat on. Okay. So that's direct, right? That's a direct statement. This is not a direct statement. This is a generalized statement. Now, you know, and you can just, I mean, everyone can reasonably argue about whether or not it's the proper place to do it, whether it's the proper expression, whether it's this, whether it's that. But remember that the flag is, if you want to make it a symbol, it's a symbol for the right to say what you believe. It's a symbol for the right to disagree. So if it's a symbol of that, then he's doing what the flag told him he could do.
I wouldn't do it if I were Colin Kaepernick. I stand up for the national anthem. Mm-hmm. I respect that. But at the same time, I love what he's doing. He's creating dialogue. This was a national anthem at an exhibition football game.
Exactly.
When do we ever talk about a national anthem at an exhibition football
Never.
Game? It wasn't the Super Bowl. It wasn't opening night on NBC or CBS. It was an exhibition afternoon game that meant nothing.
Right.
And the fact that we are talking about race and the crap that went on earlier in the summer, and yes, there's a whole other side to it too with police, you know, because the two black men got killed and then a whole bunch of police got killed in Dallas.
Right.
So when that happened, I thought something needs to happen. And I remember Carmelo Anthony speaking out about it. And he says, we as athletes with all this privilege, with everyone looking up to us, we need to do something. So I like that Colin Kaepernick is doing something. Now, I have a bunch of friends and family. I mean, my dad served in the armed forces. Some of my best friends have served in the armed forces, and they take that flag very seriously. I get it, but when you fight for this country, you're fighting for someone, the right for someone to sit down during a national anthem.
Oh, yeah.
That's their form of free speech.
Oh,
they're allowed
yeah.
to do that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's part of this country, baby. It's part of the beauty of America.
And if that's not there, then that flag means nothing, you see? And so that's why I talk about symbols. It's like, be very careful with symbols, because symbols have lots of potential meanings. And in the case of the United States of America, they have lots of very specific and often contradictory sets of meanings. So you know, and I agree with you, and I think it's fine for him to do it. It can be reasonable to argue whether or not, you know, that's the best place to do it, but I think that those people who have this knee jerk reaction that somehow athletes or musicians or actors don't have the right to say what they think, they should just do what they do. Well, that's just bullshit. I mean, you know, come on, they're citizens. So if the jackass on the corner is allowed to put a Donald Trump sign on his lawn, then you're telling me Colin Kaepernick can't make a statement about race relations? I mean, but there, you see, the guy on the corner is just mad because he didn't have the reach. You see, he doesn't have the
yeah,
reach.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
And what Carmelo Anthony said is exactly right. Look, we have the reach. So if we're being responsible, we ought to use that reach to get someplace.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So
yes.
I agree with you.
Yeah. And what I don't like about the age of social media is that whatever side you're on, you'll throw out a zinger or a meme or a video and you think, okay, well, that's it. Like,
right.
I'm rationalizing why I think what I think and I'm not going to talk with you.
Right.
I'm like, well, we're never going to reach any kind of compromise or decision or understanding if we don't actually talk with each other.
That's right. That's right. You can't
talk. Because a lot of my family members on Facebook will just send out these one-sided posts, and I'm like, well, now we have to break it down. You just can't throw out that post and think it's okay.
Right. Right. And that's the problem, is we've lost so much of that, and people. I mean. And that's one of the things that I lament the most, is that we've really lost the ability to have dialogue. It's all just a one-sided thing. It's all just a presentation, almost a thesis of ideas. It never allows for any debate or any potential other side to things. And it's everywhere, Jim. I mean, it's absolutely everywhere. It's not just in politics. It's not just in social issues. It's in business. It's everywhere now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, we don't like to have uncomfortable conversations.
Nope. And we don't want people disagreeing with us. We don't want to be around. We don't want to be around people who disagree with us.
Mm-hmm.
We don't feel comfortable with those people, so we seek out only those people who agree with us.
Yeah, I was. This is gonna go long, but I was thinking of something this week. In the age of social media, internet, MP3, or whatever, we listen to what we want to listen to. We read what we want to read. And I think along the way we're losing something. Because I remember whenever you'd have to listen to radio or watch MTV, there'd be a video or a song that you hated, completely hated. And then 4 weeks later, you thought, you know what? I kind of like that song now.
Oh, yeah.
And you either fall in love with the artist or fall in love with the author or musician. And we don't have that in 2016.
Now, that's an interesting point that you raise. And that's very astute. Like, the one thing about so-called curated presentations, right, where presentations that have been programmed, is that they're not necessarily going to give you all that you want or exactly what you want. They're going to give you a variety of things. And if you don't get exposed to them, they can just as easily not exist. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I mean, we can all sail through our lives completely ignoring whole swaths of culture. I mean, it's listen, I can go through life and never hear a rap song if I don't want to, you know, just never. And therefore, I'm being sort of cut out of a part of American culture that is important for me to at least have some sort of understanding of. Because again, without the attempted understanding, you can't have any kind of dialogue about anything, because you might as well be speaking a completely different language. And therefore, being unable to communicate. And I totally agree with you. It is both just as simple as, hey, you know what? I didn't like that artist, but now I do. I mean, I wasn't interested in Michael Jackson, like until they started playing videos on MTV, and I started realizing like how great he really was. I mean, I knew who he was, and I knew Off the Wall, like, you know, and I knew, of course, the Jackson 5. But it wasn't like I really had any kind of appreciation for who he was or what he did. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, whoa, this is really something. How long has this been going on? You know, it's sort of that epiphany, you know? So I agree with you. I think that it's a shame that that doesn't happen anymore. But unfortunately, I don't see it ever going back. I mean, I think we're going to a direction of even more compartmentalizing.
I even like calling my friend's house and being forced to talk to their parents. Or calling up my girlfriend and having to talk to her grandmother.
Right, right.
And you don't have that. Like, you didn't always like talking to her grandmother, but after, you know, 3 or 4 months, you're like, okay, I can carry on like a 2-minute conversation with her grandma. That's cool.
And it does keep you connected to a wider reality. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, the wider reality was, there was a grandma there, or there was a mother there and a father there. There was a family there, as opposed to what we got now, which is this sort of direct conversation with the one person that we want to have a conversation
with.
But
there were uncomfortable things that you had to do in life that made you grow as a person.
I think you're right.
And we live now in a love at first sight culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one where you can program your entire existence.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I mean, you really can't. If you want, you can probably never leave your home. I mean, unless you have to work, but you know what I mean? Like, you can get your food delivered.
Mm-hmm.
You can get any entertainment that you want specifically tailored to you. They're already tailoring all the ads that you see to you.
Exactly.
And they'll keep doing it, you know? So you're right. And so it just gradually reduces your exposure to the world. And that wasn't the idea.
Yeah.
The idea was to widen it.
Yeah. So if someone's listening right now, they're saying, damn, listen to those old men talk.
I know, I know.
Well, Lyle, please, enjoy your vacation. Thank you,
thank you
for
very
doing
much.
The show this week. Yeah.
All right.
So for Lyle Presler, my name is Jim Shear, and we will see yins later.
So long, farewell, I'll be the same tonight.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building.